Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. To find out more about our upcoming shows or access to our more than 1,500 podcast episodes, visit our website at www.byteradio.me. Today, my special guest is any guest who takes us through her journey of reinterpretation in her book, Design for Your Mind, How a Family Caregiver and Mental Health Therapist Renovated Her Home to Recharge Her Life and Didn't Break the Bank, and shows us the magic of how she transformed her home sustainably and on budget. Homes are more than buildings. They are environments that embrace loved ones who make us a family. When those we have cared for under that roof depart, whether from growing up or growing old, we can feel overwhelmed. How do we move on and rejuvenate our lives after years of putting others first? For more information, you can visit Annie's website, which is AnnieGuestDesignForYourMind.com. And it's design, F-O-R, yourmind.com, just like the book. Okay, with that, we're ready to go. Hi, Annie.
Hi, Robert. Thank you for having me.
It is my pleasure, and I am looking forward to our conversation. As I kind of just mentioned before we started the show, my life partner of 37 years just passed this past Saturday, and it's just amazing how this particular topic of yours is so relevant for me. And so, you know, I'm going to hope, if you don't mind, I'll be throwing in questions that have been kind of flowing through my head since that particular time.
Please do, Robert, and I'm so sorry about your life partner.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It is going to be a new world. And, you know, the idea of recharging my life is very exciting, that possibility. So let's start with your story. Can you tell the listeners about your caregiving activity and how the whole idea of design for your mind came about?
Yes. I'm a mental health therapist, and I have had a passion for interior design since I was a little girl. I am the oldest of four children, and obviously the oldest daughter. I lived next door to my parents in their later years shortly before my dad developed Parkinson's, and my mom had been struggling with mobility issues. So as their conditions progressed, I was taking on more and more caregiving responsibilities. After a long period of resisting bringing in outside help, my parents finally assented to have us siblings help them hire professional caregivers. And so that reduced a lot of the work that I was doing as the daughter who lived next door. But I continued to maintain most of the sibling responsibilities from my parents till the end.
Yeah. So, you know, and I mean, that's the life of a caregiver.
Yes.
I wrote a book a couple years ago called Caregiving, I can't forget the subtitle, but it was stories from listeners who were caregivers, and they shared their experience. It's called the Heart and Soul of Caregiving.
Okay. you wrote the book, and you've written so many that you don't even remember the title.
well, you know, it's funny. It's one of those senior moments. but with that, you know, there were some very common threads. One of them is the idea of maintaining some semblance of a personal life.
Would you like me to speak to that?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I would like to, because that's a challenge.
I don't know how many of your listeners have had experience with Parkinson's in a loved one, but one of its features is insomnia. And what happened with my dad was that if he woke up in the middle of the night and he couldn't rouse my mom, or my mom begged him to let her go back to sleep, or she was in rehab for a recent fall, and he had no one else to talk to in the middle of the night, he would call me. Nothing unusual about that. But the impact on sleep, on personal time, it really does affect one's ability to maintain an independent life. I found that it tended to lead to isolation for me because I was tired. I had little ability to plan, even to get together with friends. And the isolation itself that resulted from all of this really was destructive to me. I think that one of the dangers of caregiving, if we aren't able to control boundaries, is that we become isolated and we might have difficulty keeping up with our housework or our other aspects of our life and become ashamed, and then we effectively self-isolate because we don't reach out to people and communicate.
Yeah, he didn't have Parkinson's, but in the last few months, his short-term memory was really impacted, severely. And the first couple nights after he passed, I had some of the soundest sleep that I had had in months, and didn't realize until afterwards just how impacted my rest was.
Yes. Yes, yes. Robert, in my book, I talk about four basic needs that we have, non-negotiable. Certainly the list is not exclusive of other needs, but there are four basic needs that we must meet in order to stay healthy. One of them is adequate sleep. Another is good nutrition, another is regular aerobic exercise, and another is an enriched environment that includes social support. It can be very difficult to meet these needs when we lose control over our time, our personal privacy, and yet caregiving is a tremendously rewarding experience. It's a privilege. I consider it a privilege to help give my parents the best final years they could have. I was really happy that they were so surrounded by love. If I might impose my opinion on here, that this should not come at the cost of the needs that we have to honor in order to stay healthy.
I agree. And it can be so challenging to incorporate the social support group and that kind of thing, and how, it got to the point where, you couldn't schedule, unless you have help, but you couldn't schedule, time with that support group. So, it's one of those cases where even though, these needs really do need to be met, that it really takes an extra effort to be able to arrange that.
Yes, and it's difficult to make that extra effort because it requires some creativity and flexibility and energy. And if you're sleep deprived and you're not eating properly, you're not getting enough exercise, and you're slipping, trying to pull yourself out of a low mood,
mm-hmm.
it becomes difficult to think clearly enough to be resourceful. So if I were to go back to that situation and try to do it better this time, it would be with a focus on stacking activities so that they meet more than one need at a time. For example, taking a walk when I could get away, even if it's a 20-minute walk, having my phone in my pocket and listening to a book on Spotify. That's intellectual stimulation and exercise at the same time. Or inviting a friend to walk with me, even if it's only 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Which is difficult because you don't know what's going to happen at the last minute. But any time, because those four needs are so critical, any time I might have had a chance to meet more than one at a time, I would have taken that. But I didn't. I wasn't thinking as creatively enough at that time
mm-hmm.
to do that.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that's a wonderful idea, the idea of stacking the needs or satisfying multiple needs
yeah.
with one activity in a way.
Yeah. Yes. Now, and I'm not, I mean, I'm talking about the detriments, the costs of caregiving, and I am really giving short shrift to all the joys of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to apologize for that because it was actually an experience I wouldn't have missed. I got to see my parents deal with tremendously challenging situations with dignity and courage, and I got to support them through that. And as you know, Parkinson's takes, it just keeps coming back for more, as I describe in the book. And eventually it took my dad's voice, but before that he was using a feeding tube, and it was it's a progressive illness, so there was a new normal every few weeks. And the challenge was to adjust to that normal, which I think I did creatively. I think any creativity and resilience that I was able to bring to bear to this situation was probably directed at coping, at finding joy in whatever situation they were dealing with, and working out new rituals or new ways to have fun together. Whether it was going to Subway, we go in the car and I go and get the order and we watch the trains and we eat our sandwiches in the car, or eventually when Dad needed the feeding tube, just sitting on their big bed and my mom and me eating a pizza and just talking. Then eventually Dad was struggling to speak, so kept on, and my siblings and I kept on just asking him for advice, telling him about our jobs. And you can look at your current situation and say it's not survivable or it's miserable, but actually you can, if you accept it, if you just accept what it is, I think you would say this yourself, Robert, you can find a joy in it.
Yes, definitely one finds himself in is probably the most vulnerable state of human existence, you know, towards the end of life.
Yeah.
And if the person happens to be a particularly proud, had a particularly proud or independent life, excuse me, then, you know, it's one of those cases where it's going to be very frustrating for them. But in reality, what's happening is that they are getting to, through their experience, they're getting to be able to learn to receive that compassionate care.
Yes, yes, and they're continuing to teach. That it, mm-hmm. I mean, I realize now that they were modeling courage, and that's something that I can remember when I reach that stage in my life.
Yeah.
And the benefit of continuing to ask our dad for advice about our jobs, or telling him about our days at work, even if he could barely speak, is that we continue to honor him as a parent.
Yeah. That is one of the cases where he, I'm sure, was, you know, despite his condition, was just thrilled to be able to play that role.
Oh, yes. Well, I think giving advice had always thrilled him under every circumstance. But when you have, as you say, a proud person whose oldest daughter has just been at his feet tying his shoes, but he's still the person you come to for advice and insights on your career, you're telling him he's still him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. At what point after they had passed, did you look at the home, their home, as a opportunity to re-energize your life?
That's interesting. It took a while for me to be able to do any of this work because so many months were spent after they passed away with my sister going through books and clothes and working with the appraiser and finding places to donate things. But in the back of my mind, I had no interest in gutting the house, in turning it into something that it wasn't. I had known that house ever since they moved into it in the late 90s and appreciated its unique features. It's 100 years old. It had some beautiful details and workmanship, things that couldn't be replicated today affordably. And I wanted to celebrate those features because I had always admired them. Mm-hmm. But I also wanted not to turn the house into a shrine to my parents, but to be able to look around and remember them. So as we went through the house, it was a really valuable experience for my sister and me. We'd see dishes, we'd see clothes, we'd see photographs that reminded us of chapters in our family's lives. We'd remember, you know, Thanksgiving dinners, or we'd remember a swim meet when we looked at a photograph. And it helped me, and I think my sister would say the same thing, it helped me remember the whole of my parents' lives and not those sad final years.
Mm-hmm.
And it also helped me so I could feel joy in realizing how rich and fulfilling their lives had been. But it also helped me to find myself, because I had, in many ways, I had lost myself and disconnected from myself. So I would see myself in the pictures, or I'd come across the report cards that my mom had kept, or the little elementary school essays that I had written, and I would gradually find myself coming alive again.
Yeah, you know, that's the one thing that I'm finding now is, you know, of course, have just begun looking through things, and all of the, I mean, we had a very full life, a lot of experiences in many places, and it was truly, you know, wonderful for both of us, you know, that it's kind of like the sum was greater than the parts, you know, we were able to meet, you know, people that we know that the other one wouldn't have. So there's that aspect. There's the physical remembrances, you know.
Yes.
And then there's the idea that even though there was this kind of physical representation, that's all it was, is the physical. I mean, the true essence was the experience, which, you know, transcends.
But may I ask, as you, I mean, you're just beginning to go through these things.
Yes.
Have you yet found comfort in appreciating that your many years with your loved one were not consecrated to that illness, and that there was tremendous joy, and that your relationship was not
that end part.
Yes, was not that end part.
Yeah.
It was far, far fuller.
Yes, I am to the point where, you know, where I do recognize that, and as his health, you know, deteriorated, we would do a lot of the reminiscing of, you know, particular times, different people, you know, different experiences. So in that way, it was, you know, a reminder that, you know, 37 years covered a lot of time. Covered a lot of experiences. And that, and I would say, you know, the, you know, probably the total time of the challenges was maybe a year.
Yes.
So, you know, so that was, you know, it is, and it was very difficult, and, you know, it was very challenging and at times. Now, his short-term memory failed quickly, and I, you know, found myself at times trying, having to be very aware that his reality is very different. And I can get mad about him asking something 5 minutes ago or forgetting, you know, forgetting what I had said, you know, that we're having for dinner.
Or even
I would be in there cooking and then serving. What is this?
Yes.
It's like, that's what you wanted. So, I mean, it was, you know, those were definitely challenges. But I would not have given up anything to not be there for him at that particular time. So, some of the most recent prior to passing activities are still fresh. You know, it's not one of those that, you know, I'll easily forget.
Yeah.
But the fact is that the happy times, the joyous times, the wonderful people that we met, you know, are very much a part of my life.
Yeah.
I think actually kind of quickly, you know, moving through the process of, I had started already accepting the inevitable, you know, recognizing what was happening and at the rate that it was happening and what would happen afterwards and, you know, all of that kind of stuff that, you know, as a caregiver, you think about, you know, what's going to happen, when it happens, what's going to happen next, what am I going to do? Like, you know, in your particular case, it was, you know, you ended up having this house that, you know, you had many memories in for, you know, decades. So you mentioned you really didn't want to gut it, you know, initially. So how did the process, and by the way, the picture in the book, it's a beautiful home.
Thank you.
Oh, my God.
Thank you. Are you going to ask what kind of design decisions did I make in order to lift myself up out of this?
Yeah, I mean, you know, because you originally said you didn't want to gut it, but then you do make changes. So
yes, oh yes. I didn't gut it in the sense that I didn't knock down any walls. I started out, as I describe in the book, I started out by sitting out on the wall in front of the house and trying out trying to figure out the house's architectural style, which I eventually realized was Greek Revival, modern Greek Revival, and then did some research into the appropriate body, colors for the body of the house. If you, I mean, you remember the before pictures.
Yes.
Rather gray and somber, and I wanted to bring life and joy to the house, and so I chose finally an off-white with a little yellow undertone, and then very, very dark navy blue shutters so that the eye would be pulled back and forth and wouldn't settle on that outsized portico. You remember that.
Okay.
Yes. Inside the house, an antidote I realized to the feeling of being constricted and trapped was to encourage myself to breathe, which meant that, among other things, that I used paint. I found paint colors that were light colored, which register on the eye more slowly than a dark color, sending the message to the eye that the walls are receding rather than advancing. Am I explaining that intelligibly?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes.
So whenever I had a chance, I would use light colors on the walls to make the rooms feel larger. If there were high ceilings in the room, I would want to draw the eye upward, and so I would use, say, some facsimile of a sky color like gray-blue so that the eye would travel upward as if it were looking at the sky. I would use in one room, I mean, in any room that I could, I would use the diagonal line from the entrance to the room, the door, the doorway, and draw the eye to the opposite diagonal corner with something arresting or interesting, some large object, and then the eye would take in on its way to that diagonal corner all kinds of interesting shapes and textures. But anything that I could use to lengthen that line of sight to that diagonal corner, I would use because it helped me feel as if I could breathe. In fact, just talking about it makes me feel I can breathe. But it was, and if I, say I chose a coffee table, I would choose a glass coffee table rather than a wooden coffee table because the eye would pass through the glass, it would be obstructed, and that would not, that table being glass would not block the line of sight to the diagonal corner. If I used a lot of colors that were soothing, because I truly believe that we all need a combination, a balance between security and stimulation. We need to feel safe, but we also need to feel inspired. And so I would use a lot of blues and greens, but I would in the room, but then I would choose, say, a bright orange or a red or a yellow to pop, to add pops of color for stimulation. I had no interest in sending myself to sleep in these rooms unless I needed a nap, but I also had no interest in agitating myself with a lot of loud colors without a balance. I really, really enjoyed using my antiques that I inherited from mom and dad and from my grandmother, because when I would sit in a room, I would feel connected to people I loved, even when I was in the room alone.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. And so through that process of choosing the paints and objects, and, you know, when you had just a few seconds ago said, you know, you could breathe. I mean,
yeah.
It seems like you were able to the house provided in a way a palette for you to come alive again.
Yes, absolutely. And it was also a creative challenge because I realized that my orientation to certain design choices made by a homeowner 60 years ago, long before my parents had moved into the house, was to embrace that choice and design to enhance it, design to celebrate it, and which saves a lot of money. So what I really enjoyed was looking at something that maybe my dear mom had not appreciated or even tried to obscure and saying, no, actually, I think that's a really cool thing. It just needs, it needs the right setting. For example, the black marble shower in the guest bathroom, which I don't think my mom really appreciated, and I turned that into kind of the basis for a room that celebrated European, a classic European black and white patterned tile floor and an impressionist painting from Italy. I mean, in reproduction. So I found kind of my orientation is to accept what is and work around it. I had said a few minutes ago that a lot of this actual work on the design of the house had to wait until we were able to walk through it because we had so many piles of books and things to, and I mean, it was the actual sorting through of belongings took a very, very long time. So In the meantime, to give myself creative sustenance, I went to Pinterest and created a board for every room in the house. So my outlet, long before I was able to actually do work on creative design work on the house, was collecting ideas and just thinking about things, just slotting the ideas away in the appropriate boards for each room in Pinterest.
Well, that's great because, you know, I understand the need for creative expression.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for me, that's a very important part of my life. And, you know, as I go through this process, so much of it is regimented.
You've only begun.
I know. And creativity just doesn't live
in a regimented
environment.
So, yes.
That is a great way to prepare, you know, and do that creative expression.
Well, and it's hugely important to the actual creative process and saving yourself money, because as you think through these creative challenges for each room, long before you're able to take them on physically, you're solving problems and preventing yourself from making not making expensive purchases that you might have regretted because you thought of a way around them. Another cool thing to do, so, and Pinterest is completely free for us as consumers. Another free service is the website on Benjamin for Benjamin Moore. So I would take pictures of every room, even with it was heaping with boxes of stuff, and then experiment with paint colors. But So actually that's how I ended up being able to write the book, because I was well into the designing part of the process when it occurred to me, after having spent lots of time researching where I could donate certain items, which nonprofits were interested in, which things, all of this work, which tends to come after caregiving, it really could be spared for a lot of people if they simply didn't have to go through the any unnecessary legwork.
Yeah.
So I thought I love before and after pictures, and by happenstance, by happy coincidence, I had taken all these pictures of every room in the house in order to put them on the Benjamin Moore website. So I had these before pictures.
It's a wonderful preparation. Yeah, I mean, I like before and after too. You know, whenever I've had renovations done, I always, you know, try to make sure I had some before and after, just because it, to me, visually demonstrates that rebirth of that space.
Yes, yes. But do you find that you like before and after pictures no matter what the subject is?
I mean, I do.
Transformation is magical.
Yes, I agree. So, gosh, we are already heading towards the end of the interview, Annie. What do you hope people will take away from reading Design for Your Mind?
That all that time that we spend caregiving and learning to accept and being resilient and creative and patient and organized leaves us stronger and better than before, and our life is still ahead of us.
Yeah, I agree. Well, this has really been a delightful conversation, and, you know, and I, like I said, it's very timely for me, and also for other caregivers out there who are still involved in, you know, their daily activities with the recipient of the care, but it's something for people to recognize, you know, the joy of it, and also the ability to come out the other end, you know, a stronger, revitalized, recharged, redefined person.
Yes.
Well, thank you for your time, Annie. Now, are you on social media at all?
Yes, I have a brand new Instagram account. I'm on Substack and I'm on Blue Sky.
Okay, great. And I will look for you on Blue Sky and Instagram. I'm not on Substack, but I will go ahead and make sure that we're connected, because I'd love to continue our conversation and our contact.
Me too. This was a privilege, and I know things will be beautiful for you. I'm glad we talked at this time.
Yeah, I am too. Again, everyone, today my special guest has been Annie Guest, and we've been talking about her new book, Design for Your Mind, How a Family Caregiver and Mental Health Therapist Renovated Her Home to Recharge Her Life and Didn't Break the Bank. And I love that, didn't even break the bank. So, as she said, you can find her on Substack, Instagram, and on Blue Sky. And everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.